Hi, and welcome to Patty is Still Learning, a podcast about change, growth, learning, development, and fun. Hit us up on pattyisstilllearning.com or Facebook at Patty is Still Learning and let us know what you think. Thanks. Hi, and welcome to this episode of Patty is Still Learning. I'm Patty.
I'm John.
And we have a wonderful treat for you today. It wasn't on purpose, but in celebration of Pride Month, we have Debo Ofsiewicz. Ofsiewicz. No. I've heard it many ways.
Ofsiewicz.
Anyway, Debo, for short. And if you know Debo, you know that she is a powerhouse in the Orlando community, not just the LGBTQA plus community. We've talked about Debo before on a couple episodes, but one in season one about volunteering and how she had won the Volunteer of the Year award at the Pride Chamber. We've known Debo for quite a while, as we'll talk about in the interview. But our favorite thing is that whenever the three of us get together, we always make a sandwich of John and take a picture. And so we've got those throughout our time together. And it's been fun to watch Debo's hair color change and John grow into a beard. But other than that, we're very excited that you get to hear our conversation. And we hope you enjoy it. Well, hello, Debo. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for asking.
Morning, Debo.
Hi.
We're very excited to have you on our show. As our listeners know, we are interviewing our friends this season because we, you know, have talked about all the stuff we kind of know, but we know our friends know more about other things that are important to them and important to us. And so we're very excited to get to learn from you today, Debo. But first off, just tell us kind of what's going on with your day and your plate and how are you keeping busy?
Well, since you asked about my day, after this, I'm going to the Orlando International Fringe Theater Festival to see a show that a friend of mine is doing. That's the longest running, continuously running Fringe Theater Festival in the country, officially celebrating 30 years. But unfortunately, last year's, you know, live shows were canceled because of the pandemic. But still, the festival has been happening for 30 uninterrupted years. So that's pretty amazing. So so that's today. On my plate, you know, right now I do development for 26 Health, nonprofit community health clinic, and got some exciting things going on where I've had some meetings with, you know, the representatives from the two biggest hospital systems in the area, starting some relationships to get sponsor. You know, we do a lot of community outreach and testing for HIV prevention. So getting some sponsorships to cover that work. We also do a lot of behavioral health support groups, getting some sponsorships to cover that work. So that's really exciting. And can I plug the other show on your show?
Sure.
Okay. So on June 1st at 11 a.m., myself and some of my colleagues will be on a show called The TED Show Live. If you go on Facebook and you just look up The TED Show, you'll find it. And even though it airs live, of course, he, you know, keeps those videos so you can always watch it later.
Yes.
And it's an LGBTQ plus panel of letters. There's an L, there's a G, there's a B, there's a T, there's a couple of Qs, there's a couple of Ts. And, you know, so it's to kind of just educate people about the letters and what they mean and introduce viewers to the people behind those letters. Mm-hmm. Because if it's your letter, it matters.
Yes, exactly. I think that's something that John and I have learned a lot from you about is the letters and being inclusive and being a good ally and participatory in celebrations and activities. You know, you got us starting to volunteer with the Pride Chamber, and that's extra fun. I was actually supposed to be the lead on the welcome table this past time, but unfortunately, you know, next year. I still have my ball cap.
Good.
But we've, you know, learning, being a part of the activities that the chamber has done, and Equality Florida that you've been a part of, working with 26 Health though, that was your first foray into getting paid into a nonprofit, right? You've just written the heck out of everything else. So, you know, you actually got, we actually talked about you in a previous podcast episode because it was after one of the chamber events and you had won Volunteer of the Year.
Woohoo! And funnily enough, I won Volunteer of the Year the 1 year that I was not doing any volunteering. Mm-hmm. It was like an achievement award.
Yes, it was an achievement award. You had volunteered to self-care for yourself, you know?
Exactly. Yes, it was my year of no.
Yes. But then you've stepped back into it a lot and, you know, keep volunteering and participating. So you were still heavily into Equality Florida and on the host committee for that. And
yeah, I did still do Equality Florida, which is, I mean, that was kind of an awesome lifeline for my heart to stay involved in the community in a way, because Equality Florida has paid staff, whereas Come Out With Pride does not. So that, you know, Come Out With Pride demanded a significant amount of man hours, woman hours, person hours. Whereas Equality Florida really has a more minimal monthly commitment. And that way I'm able to continue to be a volunteer, but it's the staff that does the heavy lifting, you know.
And you and I actually, we met at Fem City back in spring of 2012 when Leah Nash had her first meeting at that nail salon place. I remember squeezed into a room learning about what was to become a movement for us. But then we really became friends when I moved to College Park. And the executive director there was like, hey, Patty, you should be in the promotions committee for Main Street. And you were doing the newsletter. So that's
right.
When you really started to get to hang out. So you've been volunteering for a long time. What drives you to want to volunteer and be a part of the community? What are your motivating factors? And what do you think might inspire others to think about volunteering?
Well, you know, I learned in college, actually, or just after college, I participated in this essentially kind of a hippie, you know, love-like meditation for world peace and healing, big event thing. And there, it's, you know, really like thousands of people come out to these events that are in the middle of the national forest somewhere, and somebody's got to dig a trench for the latrine. Somebody's got to build a fire for the kitchen, you know, and everybody has to come together and do something. And I learned there that the more plugged in that you are, the more that you're doing, the better your experience is. The more you connect with people, the more you feel accomplished. And the more, you know, the better you could just sit around and, you know, lie out in the sun and be kind of lazy. But after a while, that gets kind of redundant and boring and even depressing, even out in a national forest. So participating makes the experience better. And I just kind of took that back into when we came back into the real world, I like to call it. It, you know, when I started to realize that I felt like I was in this sort of redundant loop, I tried to find ways to volunteer. And this was at a time, by the way, when I wasn't out. I was with my boyfriend for a very long time. And there was always something kind of gnawing at me that things weren't right. And so we tried volunteering, and it wasn't entirely a successful venture because obviously there was a lot more wrong than just not volunteering. But once I got out of that relationship, in order to meet people, yeah, I was like, well, if I volunteer for something that interests me, gives me an opportunity to meet more people, because now I have basically taken off the identity of being a straight woman and put on the identity of being a lesbian. So I didn't know other lesbians. And so I started volunteering, you know, dipping my toe in the volunteer pool after that. And I often tell people when they talk about, you know, getting over a breakup or getting over some other kind of tragedy, like a death of a family member, or when they talk about wanting to meet more people, or, you know, gosh, I haven't dated anybody in 5 years. I'm always saying, find something you love and go find somewhere where you can volunteer, because you meet people that have a similar interest, and you meet people that are passionate about something. And that's, you know, and it may not be the person you meet volunteering that ends up being your date, but maybe their brother, maybe their friend, you know? And it is a numbers game when it comes to that kind of stuff. The more people you know, the more opportunity you have. It also helps with career to volunteer and meet people, and eventually somebody offers you a job, you know? I mean, that happened with one of my jobs. So that when I was let go by one business, somebody came up to me that I had volunteered with, and they had seen how I worked as a volunteer, and they said, would you come work for me? And, you know, so I hope, I mean, that should help people. You can get dates, you can get jobs, and you can.
Well, I was going to say, Debo, one of our themes this season is being an ally to the community. And in the same vein as volunteering, you know, has kind of helped you through certain things to help you do something, to help you get through something in life. You find that volunteering is also being an ally to the community, especially in the LGBTQ, the come out of pride.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. People often, they think about allies like almost always in the LGBTQ respect. And that part of it is because we will say LGBTQ plus and allies. We'll almost always use that language. But you can be an ally to any marginalized group. And I say that, you know, if you think about after the recent shootings in Atlanta, I reached out to my Asian friends and I said, you're my friend, so I don't really think about it that much, but now that this tragedy has happened, I want to know how I can be a better ally to you and to your community. And that's a thing that I definitely recommend. If anybody is feeling like they want to be a better ally or be more of an ally than just, you know, fake comments and meme postings, I would say reach out to the people that you know and ask them, how can I be a better friend to you as an individual, and how can I be a better ally to your community? And more often than not, they'll tell you something. And then of course, finding organizations that work with those communities and volunteering. And like you guys did for, you know, coming to the Pride Chamber events and volunteering for those events. And now I'm not even involved in those events and you're still there volunteering. So, you know, the more people that you know in a community and the more real that you know them, you know, the more that you really connect with them on a real personal level, the easier it is to be an ally, because you care about what happens to them. Mm-hmm. You know, and once you care about what happens to people, it becomes a lot easier to sort of check your own implicit bias, to stand up when you're out in the community and you hear someone else expressing bias, because you're like, hey, you know, they're not right now, that person's not talking exactly about my friend, but if my friend was here, they'd be talking about my friend. And so it becomes a lot easier to stand up.
Thank you. And along that same line too, how does trust, building trust, come into play here with being an ally? And you find that the more you interact with the community, you build a larger sense of trust.
Yeah, definitely. I'm lucky enough that it kind of comes naturally to me to be able to find connections with people that are genuine. I have, you know, just a little bit of interest in a lot of things. I like to say I know enough to be dangerous. But I can have a genuine conversation with somebody about something that is very meaningful to them. And that creates a connection. But then beyond that connection, you know, if somebody tells me something that is, you know, if they're being vulnerable in some way, then giving them the space to be vulnerable and not spreading that around, not sharing that, but keeping that there with them really builds a lot of trust. And not repeating things that people say, of course, blah, blah, blah. But there's also showing up, you know? I mean, this is a really good example. You know, we had to reschedule this a little bit because of, you know, my faux pas. And I'm so grateful that we did, because I really needed to show up for this other person. And I also wanted to show up for you. And so that was a bit of a struggle, but you know, because we already have trust built, I was able to reach out to you. And, but that's part of that is that, you know, showing up when people ask you to be there. And gosh, that's hard in this day and age. People always, and it's kind of an American thing, let's do dinner sometime. And then you never do dinner. I always make the effort to actually make it happen, you know? And even if I have to schedule it a month out, and if I have to reschedule it 3 times, but you know, the fact that, you know, you've actually made that kind of effort is valuable. And another thing, when you're working with people that you don't really know so well, you know, you step into a space, like the first time that you both stepped into the Pride Chamber to volunteer, when you step into a space like that, you don't really know that many people. Just again, asking questions. You know, people are often terrified. What if I misgender a transgender person? Then, you know, you just say, I'm sorry, and then you move on. And that's it. You don't say, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm really sorry, I'm so terribly sorry. Mm-hmm. You just say, I'm sorry, because I've been corrected. You know, I referred to somebody as a she, and they said, actually, it's he. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. He's got that box, he'll take care of it. And, you know, and that was the end of that. And and one other thing is, leaving room and space for yourself to make mistakes and forgive yourself for that, and leaving room for others to make mistakes and get, you know, don't berate someone who makes a mistake, just correct them and say, hey, it's okay, it was a mistake, but just going forward, make sure you do this, make sure you say this, because that prevents people from getting defensive, which of course does not lead to trust. When you take care of people that way, when you say, hey, you know, I get it, it's just a mistake, but going forward, please do this, it makes them think, wow, they actually care about my feelings too. And it helps them to trust you.
How important do you think values are, and standing up for your values, and amongst all the political division there is in this country, and even, you know, it comes down along sexual lines, if you will, how important are you to set up your values and kind of be a good representative of your values?
I think, you know, in the way that it sounds like the way that you're saying, I think because, you know, gosh, there's this debate about what are values even, right? You know, and then you have, like you said, the political environment, you have conservative values, you have liberal values, you have Christian values, you have, you know, social values, blah, blah, blah. I think it's most important for individuals to, self-awareness is huge. And, you know, and that can take, in order to figure out, in order to become more self-aware, mindfulness meditation, of course, helps a lot, but some people have a hard time sitting still for 5 minutes, not doing anything. So another option is writing letters to yourself. And you're never gonna, you know, you're gonna burn those, but using a pen or a pencil and actually writing it down on a piece of paper, not on the computer, because there actually is, and I mean, I can't cite any studies, but I know if you go online and look it up, there is evidence that the connection between the brain and the process of writing actually does elicit hormones and thought processes and things like that, neural transmission, you know, that kind of stuff that actually makes things connect better. So writing out your values, writing out what matters, and then you'll come to find that things that you thought were your values maybe aren't as important as you thought they were, and other things that you didn't think mattered that much matter a lot more. And once you gain that self-awareness and you really know what matters and what's important, then you got to set your boundaries. Then you got to decide how far is too far, you know? And again, give people room to make mistakes and forgive them. But there is a ton of truth to that old adage, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. I usually tend to give people 3 chances, but still. But it also depends on how egregious, you know, they crossed my boundary as well. If somebody pushes up against the boundary, I correct them. And if I have to correct them a second time, I usually distance myself a little bit. And if I have to correct them a third time, I distance myself completely. And then if I have to interact with them because of work or because of, you know, my volunteerism or something like that, that is the only way that I interact with them. And that's my, you know, and then I've set up another boundary, which is you do not get into my personal space. We just have to work together. So I think self-awareness and then setting boundaries are huge for that.
I think everyone, no offense, John, everyone but a white guy at this point. Everyone but a heterosexual white.
You're generalizing, I know.
Everyone has had to go somewhat meta on themselves and think about how they've been treated or how people exactly like them have been treated in different areas. I mean, even like at least, well, I'm fortunate, you know, I was in an ad agency for, you know, all my 20s, and I never had the touchy-feely boss. I never had the, you know, I never had an aggressor, or I never had somebody look down on me because I was a woman or what I decided to wear. But because I'm a white woman and I had white women friends that did have it happen to them, it made me think and understand what those values and boundaries were. And mm-hmm. So anyone who is in a minority community, if they've never had the experience, they've at least heard of that experience. And I think with the average white guy,
you know, but John's not an average white guy, so it's okay.
He was successful in sports and he was successful in acting and he was successful in academia and like everything, but he wasn't like a nerd, you know, and he was never picked on, and he was just genuinely an awesome little kid, which is great for him. But when people, you know, they don't have those experiences, then they have to then go meta on themselves in a different way.
It's interesting because of course, you know, we talk about privilege and we talk about how, like, you know, the average straight cisgendered white guy has a ton of privilege, but they also, and of course I'm generalizing, but there also tends to be a lot of anger.
Yeah.
And, you know, that anger doesn't just come up from nowhere. I mean, occasionally in very small cases, it could come from chemical imbalance or whatever, but generally speaking, that anger doesn't come from nowhere. There's a lot of expectations that straight cisgendered white guys have been put on them. Not expectations that they have, but expectations that are put on them to be, you know, not to cry, not, you know, to be the breadwinner, to, you know, represent a certain masculinity. And I mean, that's gotta be a hell of a lot of pressure.
Yes.
And so I try to, I'll be honest, I don't know how I evolved to this place, but I really try to put myself in people's shoes, no matter who they are, and to, you know, and maybe it's a little bit of the Four Agreements, the Don Miguel Ruiz, don't make assumptions. You know, I try, or the saying that, I can't remember the exact quote, but the idea that everyone's fighting a battle, and back to the Four Agreements, don't take things personally. When somebody behaves in a certain way, even if they're behaving in that way to you, it might really have nothing to do with you. It might have everything to do with what's going on inside of them. Now, of course, that does not excuse racist, you know, language and violent behavior and, you know, aggressions. But even then, you can at least have an understanding of the tortured life or the tortured soul that is inside that person that is speaking racist or being aggressive. It doesn't excuse that behavior, but it can at least bring you to a place of compassion. And, you know, it's like, I tried to explain to somebody that if there's a couple and they're in a relationship and one member of that relationship is an alcoholic, then the other member still loves the alcoholic, but eventually they have to say, look, we can't live together. I love you and it breaks my heart, but we can't be together because you're not, you know, getting help for this problem that you have. So it's not tough love, you know, I hate that term because that just sounds like, you know, they kick their child out on the street, but the parents' hearts are breaking when they're doing that because they have compassion for their child, but they're not responsible for their child's behavior, you know, and it's like that with everybody that is behaving inappropriately. So again, racist comments, aggressive behavior, you can have compassion for somebody and still say, this is not okay. I mean, gosh, I'm doing, you see me on video pointing over the screen because I have the Four Agreements hanging up above my laptop here.
And for the audience, would you share what those Four Agreements are, please?
Sure. So the first one is be impeccable with your word. Speak with integrity, say only what you mean. Avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. The second agreement is don't make assumptions. Find the courage to ask questions and to express what you really want. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstandings, sadness, and drama. With just this one agreement, you can completely transform your life. The third one, don't take anything personally. Nothing others do is because of you. What others say and do is a projection of their own reality. When you are immune to the opinions and actions of others, you won't be the victim of needless suffering. And the fourth one, always do your best. Your best is going to change from moment to moment. It will be different when you are healthy as opposed to sick. Under any circumstance, simply do your best and you will avoid self-judgment, self-abuse, and regret. And I'll tell you, I might have actually flip-flopped, don't take anything personally and don't make assumptions, because my thing has them in a four, you know, cornered grid. But a couple of things, always do your best. That, you know, that saying that says, just do what you can, where you are, with what you have. That's a part of doing your best. If you are exhausted and you're mentally exhausted, don't beat yourself up because you're not performing as well today as you did yesterday. Recognize where you are and meet yourself there. And you're doing your best with what you have, with the energy you have today, you know, with the resources you have. And that also applies to work. I've seen people in a job where they have 8 hours in a day that they get paid for. They don't get paid overtime and they work past their 8 hours off the clock because they feel like they have to get it done. And I said, well, first of all, now you have given your boss the mistaken understanding that the job that they're giving you is doable in 8 hours. And you are, you're pushing yourself beyond what you have available. You have 8 hours and you only can work as fast as you can work. You only can do what you can do. The computer is slow. You're on the phone with a client and you don't get to do, you know, the other thing because you're taking care of the client. That's fine. Your inbox is not going to be empty the day that you die. You know, I think it was Wayne Dyer said that. Your inbox is not going to be empty the day that you die. Why are you trying to empty it today? You just do what you can and just know that you're doing your best and accept that. The other two that I mixed up, don't take anything personally and don't make assumptions. Those are the hardest. Every day I practice and fall short of those, you know, every day. But sometimes I don't fall short. And then I'm like amazed. It's like, wow, that I could have taken that personally and I didn't. Oh my God, that's amazing, you know. Or I take it personally, but I don't react, you know. And that's good because a lot of times people miss. They assume, well, you know, I'll read these four agreements and then boom, suddenly I'll change. That's not the way it works. You got to chip away at that river and, you know, chip away at the sides of that river and eventually you can redirect the water. And that means catching yourself. And then when you catch yourself, you make the conscious decision to respond differently. And inside, you know, I might still feel a little sad, a little judgmental, but I did the right thing. And that brings me back up to, okay, I'm getting better. I'm getting better at not taking it personally. I took it personally, but I didn't react that way. And so that's a step in the right direction. And it is a practice.
Yes.
And now a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
I wanted to speak to something else really kind of quickly. I had attended a seminar recently for building a diverse community. Mm. And prior to the seminar, the person who was leading it had attendees take an implicit association test, which is a test meant to measure implicit bias. And so implicit bias is that, you know, you might say that you're not racist and then you take this test and it shows that you have an automatic preference for white people over black people. And you're generally, you make conscious choices to not be racist in your life, but you have an implicit bias, which might reveal itself in ways that you don't know, like you're hiring for a position and you get two resumes and one of them has a clearly black sounding name and you just decide that they aren't as smart or don't have as much much experience as the person with the white sounding name. And you don't even realize you're doing it. You know, that's the implicit bias. I had taken this implicit bias test years ago when it first came out and I first heard about it on NPR. And like most white people, I had a preference for white people over black people. Now I took it again, and I've not taken it in probably a decade. And I took it again as part of this course, and it said that I have no automatic preference for either. And I think it's because I have worked very, very hard over the years to, again, I might see somebody and automatically think, oh, they have these traits because of these stereotypes that I grew up with, you know, for that person, for that race, for that religion, that color, that whatever. And then I check myself and I say, well, wait a minute, this, you know, that's a stereotype. Stereotypes exist for a reason. I get that, but they are still stereotypes, and there's plenty of people in a community that do not fit into them. And I'll talk myself out of it. You know, being a lesbian, being from Jewish heritage, I am fully aware of the disservice that stereotypes can do. Meanwhile, I know plenty of people that love to, you know, that hold on to their dollars really tight, that are Jewish, that, you know, I mean, there's a stereotype, right? It exists for a reason. But on the other hand, I had somebody look at me once and say, I've never known a poor Jew, while I was driving a 15-year-old junker car working at a job that paid, you know, $10 an hour. And I just was like, hello, I'm standing right in front of you, you know? So I check myself, and it appears to me, based on this implicit bias test, that over the years, I was able to pull back my implicit bias by consciously checking myself. So I was able to sort of change my unconscious bias by using my conscious behaviors. And so that's, I think, an important lesson for people, that it feels like a struggle to change things, but it's work. And if you're willing to put in the work, you will eventually, it becomes second nature. It becomes, you don't think that thought anymore. You don't have to correct yourself anymore, you know?
The devil, thank you for saying this. Are there any purposeful things either Patty or I, or even our audience members, could do to practice self-awareness, checking ourselves? But is there something, are there purposeful habits or purposeful things a person can do to check himself or herself when these things come up, like a situation and you're confronted with that deep-seated thought, you know?
Wow. Sure. I think the thing about self-awareness is it is hard to do in the moment. You have to be self-aware in order to check yourself. So in the moment, it can be challenging if you haven't done some other work. And so that's why I'll go back to what I talked about before. Mindfulness meditation is huge. And if you don't know what that is, you got to look it up, because it's not just sitting still and to empty your mind. You can't empty your mind. That's impossible. If I say, don't think of pink elephants, what's the first thing you thought of? So what you do is you acknowledge each thought that comes into your mind, you know, and you say, okay, there are pink elephants. Now I'm going to go back to my mantra, or listening to the sounds, or paying attention to my breathing. And then, oh, there's that person at work that I really don't like. But instead of getting all stressed out and focusing on them, you say, okay, there's that person from work I don't like just popped into my head. I'm going to go back to my breath now, because I don't want to focus on that person. And that, you know, that's really what mindfulness meditation is. And each time you're acknowledging those thoughts coming up, you're looking at them without bias, you know, and that's what helps you to come to self-awareness. And then the other thing is the writing your letters, journaling, and not journaling like this is going to go in a book one day, literally just a brain dump, you know, just vomit it out with a pencil or a pen on a piece of paper. And you can keep it, you can burn it, you can shred it, you can, you know, make little snow angels with it and with the scissors, you know, whatever you want to do. But that the act of writing things out is huge. You don't even necessarily have to read it again. You can throw that away and start writing again the next day. That helps you process a lot of those thoughts. And this, the mindfulness meditation, the writing, 10 minutes a day, you know, it doesn't have to take a lot. When I wake up in the morning, I try to spend a few moments, just a few, like 2 moments, just kind of thinking a little bit about, you know, okay, I'm breathing, you know, it's okay. It's a good day. I'm breathing. I'm awake, you know? And being, expressing some gratitude for being aware of the things in your life to express gratitude for. And you do that kind of work outside of those moments, right? But then when those moments happen, when you see the person and you think, oh my God, you know, all of those, that kind of nationality or race behave that way. Ugh. And then you say, oh shit, did I just think that? Did I just say that? Okay. You know, I mean, that person's acting that way, but remember there are plenty, who do I know that doesn't act well? I work with 3 people that don't act like that. You know, and then, and that's something that I use as well. You know, I've been in places where I work with somebody who completely embodies one of those awful stereotypes. But I work with 3 other people that share the same characteristics as that person, and they don't embody those stereotypes. And so I'm like, okay, this person is why those stereotypes exist. They exist for a reason. But these other 3 people, they're not like that at all. And I have, you know, and I start to remember more and more. But again, like, you know, like I said, it's work, and you have to be willing to do the work. And the reason that I think that I'm willing to do the work is because, again, coming from Jewish heritage and being a lesbian who came out kind of late in life, I want people to not put me into those stereotypes. So I feel like I have a responsibility to work to not put people in their stereotypes, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the things John and I will always strive to work for is not saying, well, you know, either this or either that. We've kind of been, like, some people were like, well, he's just a bro. And it's like, that's even a bad stereotype too. Stop.
Yes.
Clap your hand.
I catch myself doing that.
Yeah.
You can, you know, it's like, you can say he's acting like a bro.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a Brené Brown thing that I learned, that where she would say, because I, look, we all are our own worst critics, right? And I will, if I do something, I make a mess in the kitchen and I'm like, and I say, you're so clumsy. You're such an idiot. You're so clumsy. And then I stop and I say, wait a minute. I'm not an idiot. I did an idiotic thing, mm-hmm. but I know I'm intelligent. I'm not an idiot, mm-hmm. but I did an idiotic thing. And when you do that, you know, when I call myself an idiot, I suddenly feel terrible inside. I feel awful. Like, I want to cry because I just am beating myself up. But when I stop and I say, wait, I'm not an idiot. I just did an idiotic thing. Then it becomes like, okay, I feel better about myself now. I, you know, and that's kind of the path to loving yourself, you know, which I am practicing every day. So.
In Facebook, when you had done the every day, the Debo reflections for that year and a half, there were a couple of times where, you know, you were talking about friends or something, but it, being a friend to yourself. And saying, mm-hmm. you know, would you hang out with a person who was berating you like that? No.
Right?
Why would you hang out with yourself?
Yeah. I have a very good friend that we were together and she went to put something in the trunk of her car and it fell. And she said, and she goes, I'm so stupid. And I said, stop talking about my friend like that. My friend's not stupid. She just did a stupid thing. And that clicked, like nobody had really put it like that for her before. And to this day, and it's been 3-4 years now, to this day, she will, you know, come back to me and be like, I love myself because of you. And I said, no, you love yourself because of you. I just, you know, opened the door to show you.
Deb, I have one final question for you.
Sure.
ties into our kind of one of our last themes of this season, and that's desired outcomes. And I think this question will kind of feed into everything that we've kind of talked about now. So if you have a desired outcome, how do you prepare? How do you go about reaching that desired outcome using all these tools we've talked about so far? For our audience, how do you go about reaching a desired outcome in your day-to-day, in your year-to-year, whatever the time frame you want to use?
Wow, that's a tough one, because I think that I'm not always good at planning, so I'm not always good at deciding what my desired outcome is. So that's challenging. But I've gotten a little bit better about thinking about what I want. You know, I'll use a job search as an example. You know, like you had mentioned at the beginning, Patty, that this is my first time getting paid to work for a nonprofit. I had to give up my volunteerism, the kind of volunteerism I like to do, how I immersed myself in it, because I just couldn't have that work-life balance anymore. And I said, I either need to become rich so I can just volunteer all the time, or I need to get a paid job working in the nonprofit sector and supporting in some way the nonprofit world. So what I did was I looked at how do I make that happen? And I created an actual plan. And it took time, of course, but I worked with a resume coach to redo my resume. And then I started looking for the right jobs, and I did some practice interviews and things like that. So I put all the steps in place. So when it comes to like a professional goal or a life goal like that, it's starting by looking what is my goal, and then kind of figuring out what are the steps I have to put in place in order to make that goal happen.
You were saying that self-awareness, you were self-aware, yeah. Skills, working with the community.
Right. Yeah. I knew what made my heart happy. You know, when I meet people, I often will ask them, I'll say, what do you do to feed your stomach, and what do you do to feed your soul? Because what people do to feed their belly, what they do to earn money to put food in their belly, is not always what they do to feed their soul. And feeding their soul could be volunteering. It could be taking hikes in the woods. It could be bicycling. It could be scratching their dog's ears, whatever. I think when it comes to a desired outcome with a situation where you're talking to somebody, where maybe somebody's being a little disrespectful of a marginalized group, and you want to, then I think that being self-aware comes into play, because you have to meet people where they are. You can't just, and this happens way too much in our world, people yell at each other. People, make these comments on Facebook that are extremely patronizing. They're not meeting people where they are. And that puts the other person completely on the defensive, and they get entrenched in their negative place. And you're trying to get them out of that negative place. So, that's your desired outcome, is to, educate somebody as to why trans girls should be able to play in, sports. And instead of just saying, oh my God, stop repeating conservative talking points, well, now you have just made them dig their heels in deeper. You have to meet them where they are. They're repeating these talking points for a reason. So ask them questions. Why do you say that? What makes you think that? Well, here, can I show you some evidence about, how that's not true? Or would you be willing to read that? Or even what I did with one person was, would you be willing to talk to a trans woman who played sports as a man and as a woman, and, kind of get their perspective? And I think I changed somebody's heart and mind, and you can only do it one person at a time anyway, so.
I think, to your point, that's a great question. Do transgender athletes have an advantage over an athlete of a certain sex. And I think if we reframe the conversation and looked at it, it doesn't need to be a winner takes all.
But right.
If we just have we all can just win together and rather than.
And play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you're talking about young, you know, children's sports, you know, I mean, everybody always says it's not about the winning. It's about the camaraderie, the teamwork, the, you know, sportsmanship. It's about, if that's really what it's about, then it shouldn't matter. Right.
No. Well, we've had some conversations with some friends about this in the, and they were very competitive, or they understand that some people use it for scholarships for college. And so it does become a big deal. And
yeah.
My perspective on that was, well, okay, so you can't say you won first in county because a trans person won instead, but what's your record? What's your PR? What's your growth? How have you improved? What's your skill set? Like, how can you still sell yourself without having to be first?
So, and I know we have to wrap this up soon, but I just want to say I would challenge them to actually cite an incident where someone did not get their scholarship because of a trans person, because even the legislators that have brought these bills to the floor in their various states are unable to cite actual examples. There was a case that was brought to court by some young female high school athletes, three girls complaining about a trans girl that was on their team winning. And shortly after, one of the women in those suits beat that transgender girl three times in a row. So it's like, and it's not, and the judge threw the suit out. And as I tried to educate the person, I said, it's not like a transgender person can simply say, hey, I'm gay, say, hey, I'm transgender and put on a dress and then go out and run track and for the girls' team. There is a process that must occur before they are allowed to compete in that other sport. And there's a whole process that must occur, you know, for a person to even really move from one gender to the other. They can put on a dress and say, hey, I'm a girl now, or, you know, I've always been a girl and now I get to be a girl. They can do that. But the way our society works, there is a process, you know. And so it's not as simple as a lot of times as people like to make it.
Thank you so much, Debo.
Debo, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
This has been really educational for me. And you touched on some things that I'm going to bring back into my life. One thing you said was, this is the best I can do today.
Yes.
And that's important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It is. And I really appreciate you both having me on. And I love talking with you both anyway. So, but having some planned out questions made for a really interesting conversation. I really appreciated it. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes, yeah. Our pleasure. And we look forward to seeing you again very soon. Say hi to Miley for us.
I will. All right. Bye.
Bye. That was a great conversation, John.
Yeah, I always learn a lot from Debo.
Yes, every time we have any moment of time with her, there's always something new to learn. Mm-hmm. After we had our conversation with her, we actually went and listened to the Fifth Agreement, or the Five Agreements book, and we found out that the fifth one was be skeptical,
but
learn to listen, which is like one of our themes, one of our life things is listen better. And then yours is always be skeptical.
Yes. Doubt.
Yeah. But we're, always learning something new. And that one was especially
good, and I'm glad that she brought those up. She and I have talked about the four agreements before, so it was lovely that that came up naturally. But learned a lot, and can't wait to hang out with her again. And we hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye, guys.